Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And in an ever-changing football world right now, here at the Talker, we are also shaking things up with some changes for the rest of the season. Our new format for the podcast will include mini-sections, mini-podcasts almost, focused on some snappy predictions for Premier League action, the Twilight Zone, that I've christened it, that is the Squawker Comparison Matrix. We're going to get some cheesy music to go around that pretty soon, and we're also going to be giving our tip for the big game that you cannot miss this weekend. So three little mini podcasts, all part as one great big giant podcast. So plenty for you to enjoy between now and the end of the campaign. We are freshening things up on the podcast, but you'll be relieved to know that in a time of instability, some things do stay the same, even in this new era of podcasting. My name's Fergal Brennan. I'm still here. And as ever, we still have Squawker's chief football writer, Mohammed Butt. Mo, steady as ever. How are you doing?
I'm doing better than Roman Abramovich, mate. That's how I'm doing, I tell you that.
Well, he's having a lot of changes going on at the minute. We're not having as many changes as Roman Abramovich.
Not quite as drastic as Roman, quite. But, still good. You know, it's a new dawn for Chelsea fans. Hopefully they take their club back and become a beacon for everyone else in the world. Go, lads.
Potentially. Well, there's enough to fill 10 podcasts
yes.
about Roman Abramovich. And we'll do our best to touch on that and get around to it in a bit more detail in the next couple of weeks. Alongside Mo, we also have podcast regular and Football London correspondent, Kaya Kainak. Kaya, how's things?
Very good, thank you. I'm delighted to be on the relative sort of stability of the Squawker Talker again after a very sort of crazy few days in football journalism.
Smashing, absolutely. Right, well, we're going to get stuck in straight to the Premier League predictions. Now, little caveat, I have to say, this is before the Thursday Premier League game. So some of the numbers are going to change ahead of the weekend. But I promise everything that we have that we're going to tell you today is correct as of Thursday. Hopefully, there's not a big, massive, ridiculous amount of results on Thursday night. So, you know, it all still works out, hopefully. It'll be all right on the night. That's what we're aiming for at the moment. So we're going to start with the first game on Saturday. We're going to go through chronologically all the way through to Crystal Palace against Manchester City on Monday night. Right, so Mo, we're going to kick off with Brighton against Liverpool. Brighton have been impressive on the whole this season, and they do have a good record against Liverpool. They've scored in all of the last five Premier League games against Jurgen Klopp's side. Liverpool have just got one clean sheet away from home in the Premier League. That goes all the way back to December. And in those games, they have given up a lot of chances. They've conceded 20 shots against, 6 goals. So that's around one goal for every 3.3 shots. However, Brighton are a bit shot shy. They're only averaging 2 shots on target in Premier League games at home in 2022. Give us your call for this.
It's got to be Liverpool, isn't it, right now? They're, I mean, I know they had their loss against against Inter, and everyone was like, oh, is it a good loss to have? Is it a bad, you don't lose momentum? They're too good for Brighton. They're too good right now. They're entering that mode. Mohamed Salah even said after the game, you know, maybe we were a bit overconfident, but now we can take it and go back. And look, if Liverpool, if Salah's acknowledged he was overconfident and is now determined not to be overconfident, come on, Liverpool are going to take it so seriously. They're going to want to make a statement win. I mean, I feel for Brighton. I like Brighton, but they're going to get slapped.
Okay, fair enough. Right, that's a pretty straightforward one for Saturday lunchtime. We're going to move across to Saturday afternoon, Brentford against Brighton. Jake, our boss man, has flagged this up as Head Tennis Olympics because nobody has won more aerial duels this season than the Brentford and Burnley players, Kaya.
Yeah,
Chris Wood, Ethan Pinnock, James Tarkowski, Ivan Toney, they are kings of the skies. There's not been a massive amount of excitement from either of them. Ivan Toney's been in really good form. 5 goals in his last 4 in the Premier League. Generally speaking, if he doesn't score, Brentford don't score. He gets a lot of his goals in the box. All 5 in 2022 have been fox-in-the-box finishes. And Burnley do give up chances in the box. 12 Premier League goals they've let in 2022. 10 of them have come from inside the box, including 4 against Chelsea last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you make it sound like it's going to be a very exciting game, don't you?
I do my best.
Yeah. I always find it tricky to predict against Burnley just because they seem to be so comfortable with what they do, so effective with what they do. But in recent games, their results have been a little bit disappointing. And I think some of their defending against Chelsea wasn't the most impressive. And I feel like maybe Burnley could exploit that, but at the same time, Brentford could exploit that, but at the same time, the way Brentford play in terms of lobbing balls into the box, I think that is meat and drink for Burnley's defence. They'll be able to cope with that. I mean, so it's difficult to see this being too high scoring a match. I think Tony being back is obviously massive for Brentford. Maybe a bit of quality from Christian Eriksen will make the difference, but I can't really see anything other than maybe a slightly dull score draw, maybe 1-1, or maybe even a scoreless draw, a 0-0, that kind of thing.
Okay, we're going to move on to a game that probably or hopefully should be a bit more exciting, which is the Saturday evening game, Manchester United against Tottenham. This one's a bit more of a narrative game, Mo, than the numbers. Conte Ball goes to Old Trafford. He lost both of his games at Old Trafford when he was Chelsea boss. Ralf Rangnick and Manchester United are having their problems at the moment. Roy Keane has basically just read the riot act. He's listed players that should be immediately sacked from Manchester United. We know that Keane likes to be a bit of a shrinking violet on these things. There is pressure on Rangnick and on United, but they do have a good record against Conte.
They do, but they're also a mess right now. There's such a lack of structure and cohesion. Conte, when he lost against Man United previously, was facing Mourinho's Man United. And Mourinho's Man United weren't necessarily great. They had their moments, but they were a solid team, right? And they had Zlatan in that first game as well. So there's no Zlatan now. There's no leadership. There's no nothing. The veteran strikers either don't want to play for the club or are having fits, you know, because they're not allowed to start every game. You know, United are a mess. They're a shambles. They're coming up against Spurs, who are in rhythm, who are in the mood. Spurs just, you know, they duffed up Man City. They slapped up Everton. Look, Harry Kane is coming. Harry Kane has loves it against United now. He didn't used to. Son loves it against Man United. I'd like to be optimistic. I think it will be an absolute hammering. Honestly, a hammering. I think it'll be like 4-1 Spurs.
Okay, fair enough. Conte breaks his duck at Old Trafford, according to Mo. Moving on, Chelsea against Newcastle. Kaya, Newcastle are banging form at the moment as they look to get themselves out of relegation. They're third on the current Premier League form table. That's based on the last 5 Premier League games. 13 points from a possible 15. Chelsea do concede goals, particularly at home. 10 goals let in at Stamford Bridge. And obviously there is situations going to be happening at Stamford Bridge this weekend. You can buy a sandwich, but you can't buy a ticket. That's now been confirmed. And Newcastle do also score goals away from home. Generally speaking, in 2022, they've got 4-3 and 8-10 based across the whole season. And you've got a nice little subplot. You've got Joelinton against N'Golo Kante. Joelinton, who last year was a struggling striker, now he's been reinvented as the greatest midfielder in the world. But he's coming up against Kante, who invented being a midfield tackler, basically, or reinvented it.
Yeah, I think it's the sort of the derby between the financial doping of the past and the financial doping of the future, isn't it? Newcastle, very good form. It's difficult to know because all of these intangibles around Chelsea in terms of how the sort of the craziness around the ownership is going to affect them, how the lack of fans in the stadium might affect them. Obviously, season ticket holders will be able to go, but the relative lack of fans, how all the disruption will affect them in the build-up to this game. And then obviously, Reece James not being available again is going to be a massive loss for them. So it seems that a lot of things are conspiring against Chelsea that seem to make this potential for a bit of a banana skin for them. I wouldn't be surprised if Newcastle go there with the form they're in and players like Joelinton playing as well as they are and dominate. Maybe not dominate, but to come away with a really decent result. I think Joelinton, has the potential to dominate the midfield. Obviously, it'll be interesting to see him against a top quality opposition like Kante. But I'm really seeing a potential upset here. So I'm going to go for a draw. And I think potentially Newcastle, who used to be Chelsea's bogey team back in the day, I think they might sort of resurrect that stereotype there.
Moving on to Everton against Wolves, Mo. Frank Lampard, it's not going well. It's not going right. Everton can't score. They can't defend. Just 2 shots on target in their last 3 Premier League games and no goals. However, grateful for small mercies, possibly, as they're facing Wolves at a time where their push for Europe is slipping off. When you are short on confidence as a manager, as a player, as a fan base, as Everton are right now, you need a few free hits. And Wolves, strangely, have gone from being a team that were really tight at the back to giving up a lot of chances. They've conceded 17 shots on target against in those 3 games that they've lost, and they've led up 5 goals. They will give Everton chances, but can Everton take them?
Let me just check something quickly. Yerry Mina. No, he's still injured. Everton are going to lose. Everton are going to lose big. They're rubbish. without Yeromir at the back. They're just, he's the best defender in the world. I'm sorry, everybody. I've been telling you guys forever. And everyone laughed at me. But look, look how bad Everton have been without him. They're going to get relegated. Nah, forget it, man. Forget them. They're going to get absolutely, like, I don't know. I can't even say the word because it's like, you know, it's a family show. Wolves have lost three games in a row. Yeah, Wolves are going to be motivated to turn it around, man. And Wolves have got a good manager. They've got good players. They're a tough team. Hwang Hee-chan, fantastic. Look, man, Wolves are going to win. The Wolves are going to win big, I think, 2 or 3. Maybe they won't keep a clean sheet, but I think they'll win easy. I think Everton are in trouble. Everton are not a good football team. They've got good football players, but they're not a good team. They've got issues with their ownership, issues with money, issues with their coach, who is, you know, the Peter principle, but like also nepotism, just, you know, molded into one human being. Come on, Wolves are going to win.
Okay, fair enough, right? You've made your points. You made your point. Pro Yerimina, not anti Frank Lampard, but maybe unmasking Frank Lampard. Leeds against Norwich. Kaya, this is an absolutely, or has the potential to be an absolutely wild game, given the amount of chances that these two teams give up. Leeds are top of the Premier League, but not in the way that Leeds fans want them to be. They're top of the Premier League for shots on target against. 156 shots on target against this season, and Norwich are second with 141. So they give up absolutely stacks of chances, but similarly to Everton, neither of them can score, because 12 shots on target for Norwich in their last four games, 2 goals, and Leeds are in a similar situation, last four games, 11 shots on target, 2 goals. They've both got the lowest amount of goals per shot in the Premier League this season, 0.05 for Norwich and 0.07 for Leeds. So they give up loads of chances, they create loads of chances and miss them, 0-0.
Yeah, exactly. I actually liked what I saw from Leeds in Jesse Marsh's first game against Leicester. I thought it was actually a pretty promising turnout. Obviously, the goal didn't come, but I thought they were quite unlucky to lose that game. I think the XG from that game was something like 0.4-ish for Leicester and 2.1 for Leeds. So that shows you like how many chances they're creating, is the point you were making there. So if you're looking at the two teams who are creating lots of chances, who has that little bit more quality to finish them off, I would say Leeds have a little bit more quality than Norwich in the final third. Obviously, with the stats you just mentioned there, it's all relative, and Leeds will want to be converting those chances more. But if they're going to stay up, then they need to take 3 points in this kind of game. And I think Jesse Marsh, when he's looking at fixtures, will have sort of picked this one out as a good chance to get his first 3 points under his belt. And I think he may even want to get a few more goals under his belt just to get a little bit of confidence, get the fans on side. And I think this will be a very important victory for Leeds.
Okay, Southampton against Watford, Mo. Roy Hodgson has kept up his side of the bargain of making Watford a bit more defensively sound since he's come in. 7 games and just 8 goals conceded compared to 16 in Claudio Ranieri's last 7. But in reality, when you're down at the bottom in a relegation dogfight, you need to turn that positivity of keeping the ball out of the net into goals at the other end and points. And Watford are just not doing that at the moment.
They're 4 points behind Leeds, right? Okay, yeah, I know Burnley and Everton are closer to them, but Burnley and Everton have games in hand. Everton, I think, have 2 games in hand, right? So there's a chance, and again, I don't think Everton will, but there's a chance that those teams can step up and pull away. Watford are, look, yeah, you're saying only 7 and 8 conceded, so okay, they're better, but they're still not good, right? They're still bad as a team, and Southampton are really good. I know they got smashed up by Everton, by Aston Villa, but Coutinho, Steven Gerrard, there's some weird alchemy going on there. You know, they don't have it. Watford don't have anything like that. You know, Emmanuel Dennis has lost the mood, the vibe he was in at the start of the season where he was really doing well. I think maybe like a 1-0. Maybe Southampton will have that old problem where they struck, where they dominate and struggle to score. It could be like that. Maybe they don't. So maybe Watford could hold them out, but I still think Southampton will find a way. I think 1-0 Saints, probably.
Okay, West Ham against Aston Villa. Mo, I'm going to throw this back to you. Claret and Blue face-off. Claret and Blue derby that I flagged this up as. West Ham have had a bit of a wobble in the last few weeks as they look to push for either Champions League or Europa, but fairly rock solid at home in 2021-22. 24 points from 12 home Premier League games. Just one home defeat in the Premier League since Boxing Day. They're probably going to be without Jared Bowen, who's been fantastic for them this season. He's had 79 games as a streak with no injuries, no suspensions. That's going to break this weekend when they face Villa. Villa were really good last weekend. Battered Southampton, as you said, the Gerrard, Coutinho, alchemy. How's this going to go down?
West Ham are really good, okay, and West Ham have done really well in the Europa League so far this season. They've done really well. They're having a great time. But this is the thing: they are now coming into what I can only describe as, this is, look, European hangovers are a thing, right? I like West Ham. They've really done a really good season, but they're going to play Sevilla, right? That's not a small game. That's a big game. They're going to have coming off playing Sevilla. They're going to be tired. They're going to be a bit oof. And then Gerrard has not only had a week to prepare his team for this team. Gerrard has Coutinho, who has just lit everything up at Aston Villa. He's back amid the chaos of the Premier League. He's going to be great. I would love to say West Ham would win this and keep the pressure up on Man United and the other top four teams. But, I find it very hard to look past Aston Villa and Coutinho in this. And with Gerrard as the helm, Gerrard's a really good, I spoke out of Lampard earlier. Gerrard, on the other hand, is a really good coach. I think he's a really good manager. He's reignited Coutinho. I think Villa take this one, maybe like 4-2, 3-2, lots of goals, I think.
Arsenal against Leicester, Kaya, we're going to get your view on this. Jamie Vardy loves to tear up the narrative and he loves to tear up my notes because he's injured. And the entire focus that we were going to look at surrounding Arsenal and Leicester was on Jamie Vardy because, you know, and I know as Arsenal fans, Arsenal have had this weird mental block with certain strikers, Wayne Rooney, Didier Drogba, Harry Kane and Vardy, who's got 11 against them more than any other team that he's scored against in the Premier League, that they are kryptonite for Arsenal defenders. And this has been the case for over a decade. So from an Arsenal perspective, there's no Vardy. Does that essentially say to Ben White and Gabriel, listen, you were going to get a big, big test. Now you're not, but the tests are going to come further down the line this season?
I think the Arsenal defenders in particular have been having quite a big test in the past few months and games anyway, because Arsenal's style has changed subtly. But the way they play so much higher at the pitch. If you look at someone like a Granit Xhaka, for example, he used to basically sit back in the back three. He's now often the furthest man up the pitch. That's a massive change in the way Arsenal play. They leave themselves a lot more exposed. So someone like a Jamie Vardy on the counter with Harvey Barnes, that could have caused Arsenal a lot of problems. And I still think Harvey Barnes can cause Arsenal a lot of issues. On the break, on paper, you look at this game, you think Arsenal were almost shoo-ins to win because of the form they're in, won their last four, looked pretty convincing in doing so. But I think Mikel Arteta wasn't exactly happy with the way the team defended against Watford. They let them through. Watford could have had, I think, a few more goals. They outscored Arsenal on XG. So it wasn't as easy a win as it probably should have been against a team like Watford. So I think Arsenal will win this game, but I think Leicester have the potential to cause Arsenal a lot of problems. And I think if Arsenal struggle to be as clinical as maybe they have been in recent matches, then there's scope for a decent result for Leicester. But I'm still going to have to predict an Arsenal win just based on the form of the two sides right now.
And you have to predict an Arsenal win to keep yourself in good favour with me. So
yeah,
so three points for Arsenal. Every game, 3 points for Arsenal. I don't know why we haven't won. I don't know why we haven't won the Premier League already. Right, final game of the weekend, Monday night action: Crystal Palace against Manchester City. Mo, Concrete Catalonia against Real Catalonia, because under Pep Guardiola, City have had a bit of a bogey team situation with Palace. They've only done the Premier League double over them once since he's come into the club. They've lost at home to them this season, and no other side outside of the Big Six has given Pep as much trouble as Palace since he's come to English football. They've picked up 23 points from 33, which is not bad, but considering the amount of games that Manchester City win against mid-table sides, it's not a great return. There's so much attention on that game at the Etihad against Liverpool in April, but this could be a stumble for Pep.
Well, this is the thing. City tend to follow up disappointing results with long winning runs, right? And I think that's what's going to happen here. I think they definitely did. Palace give them troubles and Palace will give them trouble again. However, I think City will be so motivated to just get back to winning ways and really put their foot down and pull away. They'll want to, if they can, pull away from Liverpool as much as possible ahead of the clash with them, right? So then there's so much pressure on Liverpool for that game that they can then dominate a bit more easily. So let's see what happens. But I would suspect City will win this, not comfortably. It's never going to be comfortable for City against Palace. Pat, like you said, Palace are a good side as well. Aside from any bogey team nonsense, they are actually a good team under Patrick Vieira. So I think, yeah, look, Palace are good. They're in good form as well. They've won three of their last four. But I think City will just have about enough to take this one. I would say maybe like 2-1, 3-1, 2-1 probably. Let's say 2-1.
Okay, box ticked. That is all the Premier League games this weekend wrapped up. We'll be sure to go back to this next week and check and see how successful or not successful both of you were in terms of predictions. But we are going to move on to one of the new sections of the Squawker Talker podcast, and that is the comparison matrix. Now, in future, we're going to get some jazzy music, we're going to get some storm lighting, etc., to really make a big focus on this. So for now, just imagine Mo emerging from a lightning bolt. That's what you want to get as an image. So we're going to talk about top four attacks, and particularly, Kaya, Arsenal's front three and how it matches up to the other attacks in the Premier League this season. So one of the big stories at the end of the January transfer window was Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang leaving Arsenal. Him and Mikel Arteta had clearly fallen out, and Arteta has put his faith in youth. Bukayo Saka, Emile Smith Rowe, Gabriel Martinelli, alongside the statesman that is Alexandre Lacazette, to do it, to get Arsenal into the top four. And this has been a huge conversation around Arsenal going into the end of season running. Can those players, Saka, Laka, Martinelli, as I like to call them, Shaka, Laka, Bing Bong, can they do it? Can they get Arsenal into the top four? So we're going to look at some of the numbers in just a second, but you're covering Arsenal on a regular basis. Bukayo Saka, Alexandre Lacazette and Gabriel Martinelli are banging form. Arsenal are in the box seat as it stands for top four. Can they do it?
Yeah, in a short answer to your question, yes, I think Arsenal can. I think just before going into a little bit more depth on the Arsenal front three, you can't really talk about the Arsenal attack without talking about the influence Martin Odegaard has on it. So since he came into the team full-time at the start of December, Arsenal's attack has just gone to another level. And Bukayo Saka's excellent form you mentioned there is partly because of how well Odegaard is playing in terms of linking the play. Some of the passes he's able to pull off is just sensational. So I've done my Odegaard sort of shout out. Now I feel I can carry on. And Lacazette has just been, I think he's surprised everyone. I think everyone sort of knew that he had his troubles in front of goal. I think some people were questioning his sort of ability to link the play, and he's really excelled.
Surprised me at all, my friend. I've been saying this for ages. I've been saying these guys proper, just give him the right support. And
fair enough. Yeah, and Arsenal have managed to find that right support in terms of the consistent threat from the wide guys. It does seem a shame that Lacazette's going to leave, because he's got 7 assists in his last 9 matches, which, if you're looking at sort of bringing the best out of this Arsenal side, he seems to be the perfect striker. It's a similar sort of vibe to, I think, what Roberto Firmino has done at Liverpool, obviously bringing the best out of Salah and Mane. Arsenal are sort of blessed with a bit of strength and depth in those wide positions. You mentioned Smith-Rowe, Saka, Martinelli. We've not even mentioned Nicola Pepe, who I don't think is necessarily as good as any of them, but on his day is capable of scoring goals. He's one of the few players in this Arsenal squad who I'd say is a consistent goal threat. So Arsenal are really in a good place in their attacking positions, especially when you consider in the summer, the thing they're going to be on the lookout for is a striker. So they are going to go out and buy a striker to add to this attacking lineup. So things are looking very good for the Arsenal sort of front line at the minute. And I think, yeah, it's definitely enough to fire them into the top four, and it'll be exciting to see how far it can take them next season, I think.
Yeah, look, I think basically Arsenal's form this season for me is the biggest advert for playing less football, right? Because obviously there's been no European football because they finished whatever it was last year. They were rubbish, right? So it's not in Europe. So Arteta's had all midweek, every midweek, to train with the team. And the progress he's made is just incredible. They look so... Now, okay, look, it was signings were good. Tomiyasu is really good. Odegaard has rebounded. I didn't think Odegaard would do this. I thought he flopped second half of that season at Real Sociedad, which was amazing. Over the first half season, he was amazing. Best player in the league with Messi. Second half season, he was a flop. At Arsenal last season, it was like, yeah, you're good, but are you where you need to be? I don't know. And so I was wondering, but he's really surprised me, and I'm glad to be wrong. You know, I like Odegaard, I like Arsenal, I like when they do well. And then, you know, Saka, Martinelli, Smith Rowe, they're all just coming on. But it's every week he's training them. Every week he has a whole week where he can do recovery, and then he can do tactics and shape and ideas, and where do you stand and how do you stand and when do you make runs. And Arteta's a very intelligent guy, great education, you know, Walt Smith at Rangers, Pep Guardiola, Louis van Gaal at Barcelona, Pep Guardiola's assistant at Man City. This guy's had a great footballing education. He's a very good manager. I was very high on Arteta at first. And then obviously he struggled for a while, and everyone's like, oh, you're an idiot. I was like, no, I still believe in Mikel Arteta. And I'm glad I did, because it's proven. Now, you give the guy time to coach. He's a bit idiosyncratic with his discipline. Okay, sure, fine, you know, maybe. But he's a great coach, and I think he's developed a great a great team here because he's been able to coach them. I think Arsenal have been playing Europa League every week. I don't think they'd be anywhere near as good as they are right now. Like, it was almost a blessing to be knocked out of Europe for a season because they're going to make the Champions League. Easily, I think they're favourites to make the Champions League because they're cohesive, they're coherent, and you know, they just play like a team and they get results now. So to me, I think, yeah, Spurs maybe outside chat, United aren't going to do anything. It won't be United.
Just a little word of caution. Don't say easy around Arsenal fans when it comes to top four. It gives me palpitations. I'd love to have your confidence, but that's the confidence of a non-Arsenal fan. So yeah, well, do you know what? We're going to look at the rivals in terms of the best options to reach the top four. And I am going to apologise to West Ham fans because they have dropped out of the top four. And in terms of where they're ranked or rated with the bookies going into this weekend, they are comfortably behind Manchester United, Arsenal and Tottenham. So I'm not personally dismissing West Ham. I'm just going with the numbers, and this is what the numbers say. So comparison matrix time. I'm going to throw this over to you, Kaya. I'm going to give you some of the data surrounding the most common front threes for those three sides and the big numbers that are swirling around. So Arsenal, it is Saka, Laka, Martinelli. Obviously, you throw in Odegaard and Smith Rowe, but generally speaking, that's the front three. For Tottenham, it's been Dejan Kulusevski, Harry Kane and Song Heung-min. Manchester United, as Mo will tell you, is a complicated situation. So generally speaking, their three big guys for goals and for assists are Bruno Fernandes, Cristiano Ronaldo and Jadon Sancho. Right, so Arsenal, 8 goals in their last 5 in the Premier League. 2 of those set up by one of the front three for the other. Manchester United, the same, 8 goals in 5 in the Premier League, but 5 of them have been scored by those three. However, if you wanted an example of a lack of synergy at Manchester United, only one of those goals was set up by one of the others. So somebody, mentioning no names, is not passing. I'm sure Mo will come to that in a second. And then Spurs, full of synergy. 12 goals in the last 5 in the Premier League. 9 of those were scored by the front three, and 5 of them were through link-up, Son to Kane, Kane to Son, or Kulusevski to Kane. Who has the best front three to get into the top four?
I mean, unsurprisingly, I'm going to go for Arsenal, aren't I? But I think my reasoning is Spurs, Son and Kane. I think that's obviously the reason why the statistics make it seem like they've got so much synergy. But as a unit, in terms of getting the ball forward and the way they attack coherently, I don't quite see it yet. I think having two probably world-class strikers in their team has really made a massive difference. And when those two are combining, they're the best combination in Premier League history. And it's no surprise that they're continuing to do that right now, particularly now Conte has sort of got them playing with a little bit more, I guess, solidity, I want to say. Man United... My thing with Man United is they have brilliant individual talent, but in terms of a consistent approach to how they're going to score goals, I don't really know what their aim is yet in terms of what they're trying to do to consistently create chances and score goals. Whereas with Arsenal, in comparison to those other two, I see it. And maybe it's just because I watch Arsenal every week quite closely, and I'm happy to be corrected on it, but I see it with Arsenal. I see a very clear pattern in terms of the 4-3-3 setup they're trying to go for now. They attack in pods, so they try and create overloads in the wide spaces. They try and get to the central sort of link up with Lacazette. It works really well. And every week now, because of the things Mo was mentioning there, because of the training ground time, because of the coherency, you know how Arsenal are going to play and how they're going to attack. And for me, that makes them the best attack because they know each other the best. So I'd have to say that I'm very open to the idea of being called out for an Arsenal bias there, but I don't think I am being. I think I've managed to sort of maintain a little bit of objectivity. But listen, I could be wrong. But yeah, for me, it's Arsenal out of those three.
I agree to a degree that Arsenal are the best coached, because I do think they are the best coached because Conte's only been at Spurs for a certain while. But it's got to be Spurs. You got two of the best, two world-class forwards in there. And they link together like a hand in a glove. It's beautiful. And so as long as the third guy has even a vague sense of synergy with both of them, it's Spurs. It has to be Spurs. And, you know, and I don't think Spurs have the best team. I think Arsenal are a better team, but I think that attack is amazing. It's impeccable. And I think Kulusevski is a really good compliment to the way they play. Lucas Moura is very Conte in that he presses and he runs like crazy and all that stuff. But Kulusevski does the same thing, but he has a bit of quality too, like a real sort of finesse and eye for a pot. I mean, look, it was his cross, wasn't it, that killed Man City. Great cross from the right. He kept going all game. You know, he did really well. So I think Kulusevski is a really good compliment to Kane and Son. Kane and Son as a duo, like Kaya says, just amazing. So for me, it has to be Spurs. But I have great affection for Arsenal and this team they've built. I didn't rate the window, as Twitter loved to tell me. I didn't rate the window at all when it happened. I was like, nah, this is a Champions League. But because I didn't expect Odegaard to step up this way. I didn't expect that. I admit that. I didn't. I thought he would be soft like he was last year. But he stepped up and he's showing his true talent now. And I didn't think Tomiyasu would be this good this quickly. But again, I'm happy to be wrong. I like Arsenal. I don't mind Arsenal doing well. People, it's mistaken about me. And Ramsdale, fair play. Completely blown me away. Absolute monster. You know, so Arsenal have got a really good team. They put together a really nice little team. There's still areas they can definitely improve. And I think really genuinely great sides will beat them. But there's only two genuinely great sides in the Premier League anyway. So who cares? What? Three? Well, I don't know. Let's see what the sanctions have to say about that. But Matt, as for Man United, look, there's a bit. How can I say this without...
Let it out. Let it out.
There's a bit... In a Friends episode, where Joey asks Chandler, right? Joey goes, "Whoosh," to make the whip sound, right? And Chandler goes, "Yeah, whoopah," like trying to do the whip sound, but like he keeps saying whoopah. And Joey just goes, "You can't do anything." And that little bit of that sound bite, that is how I feel about Man United. Can they press? No. Can they sit deep? No. Can they counterattack? No. They can't do anything coherently. Their plan is, and there's another bit. You know, in the 2014 World Cup, Argentina were playing Iran, and they were drawing 0-0, and they should have been losing, but they were drawing 0-0, and it was pathetic. And at the end, Jonathan Pearce was commentating, and they said, "Here's Messi, give it to him and pray." And Messi shot and scored in the last minute against Iran. But give it to him and pray. That's what Man United do. Their plan is give it to Sancho and pray. Just let Sancho do something. You know, let him pull something out of nowhere. Give it to Bruno. Give it to Sancho. Give it to Bruno and pray. Let them do something. There's no coherent plan. Ragnik is trying. God bless him. He's really trying to put something in place. But ultimately, when the base of your midfield can't pass the ball forward consistently and reliably through the lines, right, then what can you do as a team when your central defender is having one of the all-time worst seasons I've ever seen from a top four centre-back? And your left-back, Luke Shaw, same thing. And your right-backs are... a guy whose confidence has been so shattered by the media and by his previous coach that he looks a shell of the guy he was at Crystal Palace. And then the other guy is Dalot, who is like 5 out of 10, 6 out of 10 every week. Like, what? Like, if Varane doesn't play, that defence is a shambles. And Varane isn't playing often because he's injured. United they just can't do anything. They're just an absolute mess. Despite Ralf Rangnick's best efforts, they might be able to squeeze into a Europa League spot. They might be able to do that. They have enough individual talent to do it. And in the summer, hopefully they'll clear out a lot of the mercenaries, a lot of the players that shouldn't still be there, including the guy in the number 7 shirt, should never have signed him. Massive mistake. And it's really, really, it's just destroyed their team that they were building. They've been building a team for years under Solskjaer. However deficient Solskjaer was as a coach, they were building a team that had forward momentum. It was built around Bruno Fernandes. Then in a moment of desperate vanity or marketing or whatever it was, they signed Cristiano Ronaldo in the summer and they blew the whole thing up right there and then. You know, instead of signing a defensive midfielder, they signed a 36-year-old goal poacher and it just destroyed everything. United are a mess. They're completely lost as a club. Half their players don't even want to be there anymore. The mentality, we talk about PSG and their broken mentality. I think Man United got a broken mentality as well. They need, half their players need to go. It's not even that they're bad. They just need to go because it's like the toxic culture at the club. They need to retain a core spine of players. A core few players, and they need to just build again from the summer. Ralf Rangnick needs to get a manager, not Pochettino, please. We've seen, not Pochettino. Get a manager in, get someone in, maybe Thomas Tuchel, maybe he's going to need a job in the summer. Get a manager in and just rebuild. Just start again and actually follow through with it this time, because United have been through too many false dawns since Fergie left.
I think there is going to be changes. And as we said before, Roy Keane is taking names as it stands. He's writing names. He's making a list. He's checking it twice. And he wants players out of Manchester United. Quickly, I'm going to go with Tottenham. I'm never going to forgive myself for this, but I am going to go for Tottenham. Kind of a lot of the reasons that Kaya, you pointed out, I would agree with. I think individually, Kane is the best at his job from the teams chasing top four. Son is the best at his job from the teams chasing top four. And this synergy, and that word makes me feel very strange and weird, but it does click with them. Not definitely better than United, not streets ahead of Arsenal, but better. And a lot of that comes from these guys have played together more, they are more experienced in certain situations. And just the addition of Kulusevski, for me, after Luis Diaz, he's been the best attacking signing of the January transfer window, and I'd include Philippe Coutinho in there. I've been that impressed with Dejan Kulusevski. You look at the Man City game, he was the surprise factor that Man City couldn't deal with. They tried to manage Kane, didn't do it. They tried to manage Son, didn't do it. They didn't know how to handle Kulusevski, and ultimately that was the key. And I just think the link up between those three is just a bit slicker than Arsenal as it stands, but Arsenal will get there, mark my words.
Saka's a child, he's 20 years old. Like, Arsenal are building something for the future. As long as they don't sell Saka to Man City, please don't sell Saka to Man City.
Before we slam the door on the comparison matrix, Kaya, I just want to grab a quick shout on an individual basis. We've talked about the front threes together, so what I want to look at is which individual will have the biggest bearing on who finishes in the top four. So Kane and Son, as we mentioned, fantastic as a link up, 21 goals combined. Goals and assists per 90 minutes for Son is 0.73. Alexandre Lacazette is just behind on 0.70. Ronaldo, let's not forget about him. XG is pretty impressive, 12.3. And then Kane is just behind him on 12.2. Systems, we're not in agreement of who's got the best front three. Which individual is going to have the biggest bearing on who finishes in the top four?
I think the obvious answer to this question is probably Harry Kane, because if he decides that he wants to start scoring goals consistently until the end of the season, there's not really much anyone else can do in terms of Premier League defences. There's not going to be anything that anyone can do to stop that. My only issue with that, I guess, you're asking as an individual. My thing is, if Alexander Lacazette was to get injured for Arsenal, they can't replace him. And then they lose that link up. But I guess that's more a systematic thing. So as an individual, it's got to be Harry Kane, because, yeah, he's the best individual player for me among those front threes that we've mentioned. And if he sort of finds his form between now and the end of the season, that for me is the only thing that can realistically, I think, stop Arsenal from claiming that fourth place spot, because he just has it in him to go on these runs. Between sort of this period and the end of the season, he does tend to do it. So that for me is going to be the most crucial sort of deciding factor.
Harry Kane is 11 goals behind Andy Cole in terms of being third all-time Premier League goal scorer, right? If he scores two goals, he's going to top Man United. I think he'll score two goals at the weekend, by the way, to pass Frank Lampard to be fifth. And then he needs 8 goals to pass Aguero, which I think also is very doable. He needs 11 in 12 to pass Andy Cole and be third all-time Premier League goal scorer. I think we're going to see it. I think he's going to go absolutely supernova trying to get third place in the list. And I think he'll do it as well. And I think that's why I think he will have the biggest outcome. I don't think Spurs will get there, but I think Kane's going to do his damnedest to make it happen. And I think he'll have one of those magical ends, like 2017-18 when he scored loads. I think he'll have one of those magical ends to the season where he's just hammering in goal after goal after goal. I think he starts this weekend probably with a hat trick, to be honest. And I think he's just going to go crazy. But I don't think it'll be enough. I think Arsenal will take top four.
Okay, right. We're going to move on to wrap up with our final section, which is the game to watch this weekend. As part of the new podcast, we're going to give you our tip here at Squawker of which game you should be watching outside of the Premier League this weekend. And Mo's got the popcorn out for Real Betis against Athletic Club in La Liga. Just to give you a bit of background in terms of where the two teams are at the moment, Betis have effectively bottomed out of the Champions League race, just 6 points from the last five games. They've lost to Sevilla and Atletico Madrid, who are now ahead of them in the race to get into the Champions League next season. They are through to the Copa del Rey final, but they've slipped. Manuel Pellegrini, as beautiful as those Kappa jackets are, will be annoyed that they've dropped out of the Champions League race. They just can't stop conceding goals. They haven't kept a clean sheet in La Liga since the middle of January, and they can't gun their way into the top four because they're coming up against some of the biggest guns in Spanish football. Momentum is important, particularly at this stage of the season. Athletic Club, Mo, are not setting the world alight, but slowly, steadily, they're getting there. 9 points from seven games. If they keep that consistent run going, they probably won't get Champions League. They will get Europa, and this should be a cracker this weekend.
Look, this is the thing, right? You said Betis can't gun their way. They were gunning their way to
they
the
were.
Champions League. The problem was their gun stopped firing. Juanmi was like, he scored one goal in his last six games. Like that, and that's it. He was on a ridiculous run of form. Unsustainable, perhaps it was the whole time. And that's maybe is what has precipitated this whole thing. It's just that he's reverted to the norm and he's just not scoring all the time. So, you know, that's just it. It sounds really simple to say. But I mean, this guy scored, what was it? Seven goals in five games. Like he was ridiculous. He had a ridiculous form. And that was propelling Betis forward, right? They beat Barcelona in that time. Juanmi scored against that. You know, so they had a really, really good run and they've hit the wall, obviously, right? And they've really struggled. but they're still so good to watch, even as the results aren't very good. This is why it's a game to watch. This is why for me it's the game to, it's my game to watch, right? Even as their results have been kind of they've been poor. I mean, they haven't won in five, right? They haven't won in five. That's not good. They haven't won in five. They've lost three of those games. They made the Europa League, the Copa del Rey final, basically because Rio didn't have enough to punch through them at the Anita Villarreal. They drew 1-1. They won the first leg 2-1. So they drew the second leg 1-1. And then that was it. They got through. They sort of dribbled through against Zenit on a, you know, really sort of underwhelming night. You know, they lost the derby to Sevilla. They lost the derby. So they lost to Eintracht Frankfurt. You know, so they're really struggling. But all of those games, they've been great to watch. In all of those games, they've been good to watch. They're fantastic. They play great, propulsive football. Have to see how injured Guardado is, if he is still hurt. That's going to be a problem for them. But with Canales, with Fekir, they're just really good to watch. They play really good, proactive football. Athletic Club are interesting. Athletic Club gambled everything on making the Copa del Rey final, right? They love the Copa del Rey. They're the only Barcelona won it more times than them. And they lost to Valencia. So, you know, that's unfortunate for them, but they're actually a good team. Marcelino's a really good coach. They're really competitive in the middle of the field, really ferocious. And the Williams brothers up front, you know, I mean, Iñaki Williams is Iron Man. I think it's well over 150 games now. He's played consecutively, like Jared Bowen, eat your heart out. Iñaki Williams is amazing. Nico Williams is looking really promising too. They're a good side. I mean, in terms of result, I'd probably say Athletic Club might take this, to be honest, with the way Betis are playing. But in terms of performance, that's why it's must watch, because I think Betis will go for it regardless of whether or not they win. And you know, Joaquim, it's always good to watch Joaquim. Enjoy him while you can. He won't be around forever playing. And then
He'll try and be around forever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And yeah, Hector Bellerin and his amazing moustache is there. I mean, Hector Bellerin and Mark Bartra in the back line, it's offensively attractive, isn't it, really? Like, you have to think about that. But you know, Claudio Bravo in goal, though, that's the one there. I mean, obviously Bravo's always had his weaknesses, even as he's had his strengths too. I love Betis. They're just so good. It's a shame. Yeah, they were in third. They were like looking like, oh, are they actually going to challenge Sevilla and Real Madrid? Then now they're tumbling out of the top four. I don't know that they'll even be able to get back in, to be honest, because I think Barcelona have sorted themselves out there. They've got that spot in there. And now Atletico Madrid also seem to have realised, oh, let's just not play the 34-year-old who can't run up front, and we can actually play quite dynamic and attractive football. And they're doing that, and they're doing so. You know, they had to get humbled by Man United in the fact that they dominated and didn't win that game. But I think it's let's see though, because if they suffer a bad result against Man United, maybe it'll knock their confidence. I don't know, but this is going to be the game to watch. Betis versus Athletic. Athletic going to go for it. They're going to try and pick themselves up after the loss. Betis in terrible form, but they're still great to watch. Entertaining. It's everything you love about La Liga. 3 p.m. on a Sunday as well.
I think we're looking at the picture, Mo. You've definitely got a real beef with 30-something strikers that can't run. If you're a mid-30s striker listening to this podcast, I apologise, because Mo has your career pegged.
These guys. No, look, it's just this is the thing. When you're a world-class striker, right, and a lot of that is based on your mobility, right, this is not going to be a problem for Lewandowski because he never runs. It's not going to be a problem for Kane. He doesn't run. But if you're an elite world-class striker and your game is based on mobility and aggression and pace and everything, once that goes, you have to either adjust yourself incredibly, and then once you adjust yourself, like Cristiano adjusted his game, right, to adjust to his lacking pace. But then he had to play him in a team where they're just going to funnel crosses in for him. Otherwise, what's he doing on the pitch, right? Suarez never adjusted. He never stopped playing the way he plays because he can't. So he became a problem for Atletico Madrid. So, you know, that's the issue that I have. If you're getting older and your body's failing you, adjust your game or move to a weaker league and then dominate anyway. Like Cristiano, if he goes to the MLS, he'll hit 1,000 career goals, easy. Like nothing in 2 years, probably. But anyway, Real Betis Athletic Club, watch it.
listen, there's hope for all five-a-side heroes on the back of Mo's message there. We're going to wrap up quickly, Kai. I'm just going to throw across to you on this game. This nestles in nice and neatly just before Arsenal against Leicester on Sunday. That's one of the reasons why we flagged it up as the game to watch. But also, the context of the Spanish top four race, this could be huge. Atletico Madrid play on Friday night. They're at home to Cádiz. If they win, their game's been moved because they're playing Manchester United next week in the Champions League. If they win, and as Mo is tipping for, Real Betis lose, that's a 5-point gap between fourth and fifth and could mean that the top four race in La Liga is over.
Yeah, it could do. I don't want to fully rule it out just because I like a race going down to the wire. But I do agree with what Mo was saying. I think Barcelona have sorted themselves out. I think the January signings have worked really well for them. So I think they're probably clear. So if Real Betis are looking at catching anyone, it's probably Atletico Madrid, who also seem to have got their act together. So it's unfortunate for Betis because I was really sort of enjoying the way they were playing football at the start of the season. But I think, unfortunately, like you guys have been saying there, it does seem like they're going to fall away right at the last, which is really sad to see, because it would have been nice to have someone new coming into the Champions League next season and seeing how that would have worked out.
And it's not all bad for Betis. Like, Hector Bellerin gets more handsome by the day. And those jackets, wow. Like, I'm not marketing them, but those jackets, wow. Right, we're going to wrap it up.
I reckon they'll win the Copa del Rey as well, for what it's worth. I think they'll beat Valencia in the final and they'll win the Copa del Rey. So there's that. The season isn't going to end terribly. You can never complain if you end the season with a trophy. But it's a shame because they could have got top four. And it would have been great to see Joaquim in the Champions League again. But yeah, I think, they'll win the Copa del Rey, I think. They'll get themselves together in time for that.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a tip. We can look at that in a couple of weeks to come when the Copa final is scheduled. Guys, we're going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. As always, changing times, changing podcast, but it's great to have you here. Mo, Kaya, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you.
No worries, mate.
Great stuff indeed, guys. Obviously, here at the Squawker Talker podcast, we are trying something new. So if you hit subscribe, you can get access to the brand new episode as soon as it is ready. Give us a shout on social media. Let us know what you think of the new podcast format. And we will be back next week, myself, Mo, probably Kaya, or at least somebody, to get stuck into some more Premier League predictions and some big, big stories as we reopen the comparison matrix. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.